This is Shutters Inc. with Bruce Williams and Glyn Lavender.
Hi, and welcome to episode 416 of Shutters Inc. This is Bruce Williams from ShuttersIncPodcast.com, and we're back on Source Connect with Mr. Glyn Lavender from CreativePhotoWorkshops.com.au. This technology's marvellous stuff when it works, isn't it, Glyn?
You sound much better than you did last time. Oh, thank you. It's a talent.
How's your week been?
It's been okay.
Yeah?
Been taking some photos. I've been to Adelaide.
Oh, how was Adelaide? Bounces.
It was pretty good. I went over there for the Adelaide Camera Expo, ACE, it's called.
Yeah.
And it's in downtown Adelaide in the Adelaide Markets.
Right.
So inside, so it's like an internal undercover market area they have. But so it was put together by a company called Photo Co.
Okay.
And look, and that was fun. I was fabulous, you know. The layout was a little unusual. It was because it was the market, but the market itself was closed. So you've got all these lanes of where market stalls would normally be all closed off, and we're kind of around the outside, in the inside of the building, not the outside of where most of the market stalls are. So it's a bit spread out, and it's a little bit dark because most of the closed stuff is closed.
Right.
And the present, and because it's a fairly tight confines, the presentation area was in a kitchen, like a display kitchen.
Okay.
And talking out to chairs out of like a little bit of an open area, but I had to stand. I was actually talking from a kitchen bench, which is a first. That was a good bit of fun. I think maybe they do like cooking demonstrations there because they had TVs and stuff. So maybe they do stuff for at the marketplace.
Yeah.
Cooking lessons and things. But that was the first, doing a talk from a kitchen. I had 40 minutes to talk.
Yeah.
I had 240 pages of PowerPoint to do in those 40 minutes. Finished 2 minutes early. It's not a bad effort, is it?
Yeah. Not a bad effort at all.
What's kind of sad, though, is I'm in the midst of building my talk in New York in a week or so's time.
Right.
That's an hour and a half long talk. I'm thinking I'm going to need like a 600-pager. I'll have to slow down my talking a bit.
Wow.
One of the two. Yeah, so... Let me pull up my presentation here and see that's the right one. I'm on page scrolling, 338 so far.
Wow. So you're halfway there.
I'm halfway there. That's about 50 minutes worth of talking.
So how many pages did you say you had for Adelaide?
240. In 38 minutes.
Yeah, okay.
You reckon I should do 750 to be on the safe side?
I'm thinking 480, so I'm thinking 500 is probably going to be enough.
I don't know. 40 minutes, 80 minutes. I've got 90 minutes to talk.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm thinking 750 to be on the safe side. Yeah. I could all speed up a bit towards the end of Nate's video. You know?
At the end, it'll just look like video.
It's like 25 frames a second.
That's right.
Stop motion animation. There you go. So early in the week, though, I received my little Kickstarter project camera, my little Yashica Y35.
Awesome.
With its caption, "The Silence of Story."
Oh, nice.
But I don't know what that means. I think it's maybe lost in Chination, the translation from Chinese to English. Chination. The silence of story. But here's the thing. Let's all have a little chat about this for a few minutes, if you don't mind. Because like any Kickstarter project, it had teething problems, and it's quite an innovative product. So for people who don't know what it is, it's a little rangefinder-styled camera. So it looks like the old 35mm rangefinder cameras.
Yeah.
But plastic body, not metal body, because it's too expensive these days to make that sort of stuff. But a little version of that. And it has a film door, so it doesn't have a screen. It's digital, but it doesn't have a screen.
Yep.
It's full auto, so you've got no option for settings.
Like shooting in P-mode, basically.
Like shooting in P-mode. Yeah. But imagine shooting in P-mode where you can't, where there's no, even if we look through the viewfinder, there's no shutter speed or aperture displayed.
Right.
So you have no idea what settings are being used.
Right.
It has an electronic shutter So when you press the button, it has a fake shutter noise, but there's no way relevant or bears any relation to the actual speed of the shutter.
Right.
So a 1 second shutter speed will sound the same as a 500th, as an example. So you've got no numbers, no guide, and no way of gauging. And all you have is a little turning dial, which isn't overly accurate. It's kind of hard to figure out exactly where it's supposed to be pointing, for plus and minus to brighten and darken the photos. Right. But, of course, it's plus and brighten the darken the photos that you can't see because there's no screen.
Right.
So it does rely on you being able to look at the world in front of you, the lights and the darks, and understand the camera's brain.
Yeah.
And try and figure out, what kind of mistakes is it going to make? Is it going to overexpose because of this darkness in the scene? Is it going to underexpose because of this brightness in the scene? And then you've got to guesstimate with only a two-stop latitude, minus two, plus two, roughly what it's going to do. With, no, of course, no idea should it actually be functional or not.
Yeah, right.
On top of that, so it's got a film door. It opens up like a film camera would do, as in the back door.
Right.
And you have these little plastic digital films that you put in that look a little bit like the old APS-C size film canisters.
Okay.
And you put them in. If you put a certain one in, it's 200 ASA film with a certain color look to it.
Yep.
If you put another one in, it's black and white film. You've got another one. I've got another one which is 1600 ASA, ISO.
Yeah.
I've got another one which changes it all to 6x6 colour photos rather than 4x3 ratio.
Right.
So you've got to kind of pop open the door, put this film in to change the thing. So it sort of arrived, and I've been seeing. So first up, a lot of Kickstarter projects don't even make it to the point where the product even gets released.
Sure.
So kudos straight away for whoever bought the name Yashica out of China and made this thing happen. The fact they even got this quite unique technology to work.
Yeah.
Because there's nothing else really like it on the market. So they've had to overcome all sorts of technical dramas, I'm sure, to make this work. You're putting in these little faux film canisters and changing colours and looks and so on and so forth. So kudos they've got it out there. But before mine arrived, I was already seeing all the naysayers on the internet.
Right.
People haven't got it yet, mind you. All complaining already about, the quality's no good, the curvature of the lens, the blah, whatever they could possibly complain about. Then a few people started to get them.
Yeah.
And they're getting them. They'll point them at their front window of the house and take a photo through the window and then complain. That, it's no good, the colour's terrible.
The optics aren't as good as my Zeiss lens.
Exactly, it's not as good as this, it's not good as that. Yeah, there's curvature, one guy complained that it's got blown highlights. Yeah, that's your fault, dude, for not knowing how to expose. So it's like this on and on and on, lots of stuff. So I was waiting to see, what's it going to be like? So it arrived, and, I was surprised. It was not as plasticky as I was expecting.
Right.
To me, it's a toy camera. It's a toy camera for a bit of fun, to enjoy yourself and have a bit of a play around,
Yeah.
And to challenge yourself to look at the world and think a bit more before you shoot.
Yeah.
Conversely, but also when you shoot, it's just got a wind-on lever. You've got to wind on before you can take your next shot.
I love it.
So it's kind of fun, you got to cock the shutter, so they say. Yeah, so it was better built than I expected. The packaging was nice. It looks good. It's a sweet-looking piece of kit.
Right.
Now, when it arrived, the kids were at school, so I couldn't really take photos out the bedroom window, but there was really nothing to take photos of. It was blazing sun, but I did go out to a little country road, do a couple of snapshot shots of fields and just some clouds and that sort of stuff, and I found another fabulous use for my Narbox.
Oh, okay.
Because whilst I'm out with this little Yashica, I can pop the SD card out of the Yashica, pop it into my Narbox, access it on my phone, and see all the photos whilst I'm out and about shooting.
All right. Nice.
Which is brilliant. And the photos look, straight away, photos much sharper than I possibly expected.
Right.
I really didn't even expect them to be sharp, to be honest. I was expecting them to be, just a bit, a bit like the Holgers and the Lomos, and just pretty basic.
Yeah.
Yeah, but really quite sharp.
Yeah,
nice. Not great close focusing ability, which is a bit disappointing. It probably comes into its own about 6 feet outwards, 5 or 6 feet outwards. So, yeah, so the kids finished school and I said, right, you come with me, we're going to do a photo shoot. So I took them down into the old abandoned mill that me and you went to that time to shoot. And it really tested me.
Right.
Because you're guessing, you know, I've got kids inside a pitch black building or a really dark building, standing in a massive open doorway with really bright light coming in.
Yeah.
And trying to gauge... Yeah, what kind of exposure? Of course, you're looking through a viewfinder, not through the lens. So your composition's all out of whack. And yeah, the closer you get to the subject, the more out of whack it is. So I did a bit of a shoot. I came home and I got half a dozen pretty okay shots out of it.
Yeah, right. You know,
pretty reasonable, pretty sharp. But I got a whole bunch of crap ones.
Right.
Because that's then that I realised that, hey, that shutter that sounds like click is actually like a half a second or a three quarter of a second. And having your kids doing spinnies tends to make them blurry, you know, which is right. So who'd have thunk? And also just the stuff like, you know, when you press the button to when it there's a delay between when you press the button and the actual shutter activating.
Oh, really?
So not by much, but enough that you think you've taken the photos, you're going to move because it's a half a...
But that is typical of digital point and shoots, though.
Oh, not so much anymore. They're all pretty much instant these days. They're all down to microseconds of delay. Okay. But certainly back in the olden days, one of the first digital compacts I used, I took my then young nephew to the cricket at the MCG, and it was a massive crowd of about 50,000 people, and they're doing the Mexican wave.
Yeah.
And I wanted to take a photo of him. He was about six at the time, doing the Mexican wave.
Right.
Well, the only way I could do it is I had to press the button when the wave was about 300 metres away. If I pressed it then, by the time it moved around, the 2 or 3 seconds it took to move around, I have a chance of getting him going up for the wave. So they've come a long way since then, an awful long way, you know. We're now up to microseconds of delay. So this has got a bit of a delay. And when you're working with maybe half a second shutter speeds, it's not a good thing. But because you don't know it's a half a second shutter speed.
Because the sound effect doesn't tell you.
Yeah, exactly. So once again, good learning experience. I figured, okay, I'll see what's going on there. I figure out what I have to do there. Blah, 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 blah. Yeah, no worries at all. So I dragged him out again the next day.
Right.
To the mill again. And did similar locations because I wanted to, you know, obviously compare A to B.
Sure.
And but with my newfound, hopefully improved understanding of how the camera works.
Yep.
And I got a significantly higher success rate.
Cool.
Of photos. So to the point where there's a couple of mates who really like.
Nice.
Yeah, which is a surprise. I know it's a bit of amazing. But I'm actually really enjoying it. It's a lot. Now I've been posting these things up onto they've got their own Yashica Y35 Facebook group. And all these people jumping online saying, oh, thank you. Somebody who actually can take photos has taken photos with it.
Right.
Maybe now all these people who can't take photos, who've been taking photos with it and then getting online saying how crap it is, can shut up and start to understand that it's not the tool, it's the tool using it. They didn't use that Smileline, of course, not them using it. But, yeah, I still haven't seen anyone post other than my own, egoly say.
Yeah.
I haven't seen anyone else yet post in the group any decent photos.
Right.
But that's... maybe lack of opportunity. Let's give them that. Hey, there's not many cameras out there in the wild yet anyway. They've only just started shipping them. So there's not many people using it. And maybe people have had an opportunity to take photos or they simply don't have the skills. And if you've grown up taking photos in this digital age, going from that to even to shooting with a film camera is a fair learning curve.
Yeah.
The reason I wanted to buy the camera was A, for the fun side of it, but also I wanted the joy of shooting like I was shooting film again.
Yep.
But without the pain in the bum having to get films developed and waiting to finish the roll and all that sort of stuff. So I really enjoyed the compact form factor, the having to wind on between shots, all that kind of stuff. And so I've been pleasantly surprised. It's far better quality than I expected. But once again, I've already seen people on the internet straight away there. I've got mine. I've taken the shrink wrap off. It's for sale. people sell them before they've even... It's just typical of the modern photography, you know.
Yeah.
Don't embrace the uniqueness of the tool.
Mm.
Yeah, compare it to your $5,000 SLR and say it's not as good because it costs you $100 and then dump it out, you know.
Yeah. So just explain to me again, is it autofocus or do you have to focus it?
Fixed focus.
Okay.
So basically no focus whatsoever.
Right. So it's just one aperture for every shot.
No, it's got multiple apertures. Okay. But it's got because it's a wide angle lens and however they've configured it. But a lot of these cameras used a fairly rudimentary focusing system, which is why it's not a close focus camera. It doesn't focus any closer than 5 or 6 feet. Right. And if you do your zone system for focus and understand that if your focus doesn't start till 6 feet out and it's really actually focusing probably at about 12 feet, then pretty much everything's going to be in focus with a wide angle lens.
Right,
a wide-ish angle lens. Yeah, so there's no actual focus.
Right.
So yeah, it's aim and press. Now the only thing I've still got to work on is the parallax error, the error of because I was shooting some pretty cool shots that I thought I had this thing lined up. What I was doing, I was hoping for the slow shutter.
Yeah.
What's up?
No. I'm just thinking of the parallax error. Yeah, because of the viewfinder.
Yeah, but.
Being
exactly
offset from the lens.
Yep. Exactly, and I was hoping to get some of these slow shutter speed stuff going because I had all this in this old abandoned factory. There's all these broken windows and all this plastic stuck to it, and it was all flapping in the wind like tendrils. So I wanted to have them moving and blurred with the slow shutter. But of course, that's the time I chose to use fast shutter and freeze and mostly freeze everything. But half of the shot, I don't know how I did it because. I still have no idea, but half of the shots I photographed most of the wall and can hardly see my daughter. So I'm not really sure how. So I had perfect view in the viewfinder.
So am I right in thinking that as you look through the viewfinder, you've essentially got to compose a little bit to the left and a little bit up from what you actually want?
A little bit to the right and a little bit down.
Okay.
The viewfinder's on the left hand, upper left.
Same thing. Yeah.
Yeah.
I get what you're saying.
Yours would be perfect if the viewfinder was on the other side.
I just mean that when you're looking through the viewfinder, you need to be looking at an area that's a little bit up and to the left of what you're hoping to capture.
Yeah, something like that.
So we both got there just by different routes.
I try not to think of it too much. And hopefully not have something absurd. Another important lesson I learned out of it is take the lens cap off.
Oh, okay.
Because with the viewfinder, the rangefinder, you don't see. You've got to remember to take the lens cap off. I only did one shot with it on, but it was a quick reminder of days in the past when I'd do an entire roll of 36 with the lens cap on. So it's been a heap of fun, I got to tell you. And so I'm going to take it with me to America next week, and when I'm doing some model shoots, I might pull it out and do a few shots that way as well. And
that's awesome.
The complete pro, the complete something or other. but working with an R-Box has been great because I popped in for lunch, and instead of having lunch, I've connected the SD card in there, popped up on the app on the phone, got to look at the photos and post stuff online from it. So that's kind of cool. You don't have to go back to debate or have to carry a computer. So
Okay, so should we cover some stories?
Well, we could cover some stories. I thought what I just said was more than interesting enough. Oh, one more thing about our podcast. I got an email today from a mate of mine who I run workshops for in Santa Rosa, California.
Okay.
And Mike, if you're listening, g'day, mate. Crikey, g'day, mate. How you doing? Because you got to speak that way when you're over there. It's the only way people understand you're from Australia.
Yeah.
And he said he actually listened to the. I don't know why he listened to an episode at some point.
Right.
He heard my call out for rooms in New York for next weekend. He goes, "I've got one for you."
Oh, you're kidding.
It's just a bit late, but how awesome is that? It worked.
Wow. There you go.
Bloody marvellous.
Yeah.
So anyway. we can talk some stories. I thought my review was more than there'll be a photo in the show notes this week. I'll set one up to you to include my favourite one. My daughter's had their hair cut. This is fascinating for the podcast. Last Saturday,
right?
And my elder's got quite a bob cut.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, and the photo I set up is a silhouette with a reflected shadow on the ground, and the bob cut was perfect for it. So I'm glad she did that.
Yes.
It suits the photo fabulously.
Yeah, it does.
Yeah. So Yeah, we can talk about some stuff. What do you want to talk about?
Well, let's do the couple of things that you've got, and then we'll do the listener stuff, and then we'll do my stuff.
I guess we could do that. Well, there's two things I've got. One was, did you see the thing this week about Banksy?
Oh, that was just epic. I just love that.
So Banksy, for those who don't know, a graffiti street artist who's gained worldwide fame, and yeah, his paintings are worth millions of dollars now. Well, he had a framed iconic one of his works of art up for auction in England, and it knocked down for $1.4 million. It was won for, and as soon as the bid finished, The frame came to life, started buzzing, and the artwork slid down and started shredding itself. So the frame was actually a shredder.
Yep.
Now, the thing is, that piece of art is now worth a hell of a lot more than
because of all the social media.
Exactly. It's the only one he's shredded. So the guy who bought it for 1.4 is now going, well, there's a $2 million profit straight away.
I love the fact that someone actually captured video of it happening. That is just awesome.
Yeah, and who do you reckon that was?
Well, it might have been someone that Banksy sent along to
Yeah, say. Or it was Banksy himself. There's a guy in the audience that people have pointed out, they reckon that's him.
Right.
So, and because he was laughing as it was happening.
Oh, really?
Because he was the only one who seemed to know. Everybody else is shocked and he's laughing.
Right.
But I was thinking we should do a Trash Your Photo Expo.
Okay, how does this work?
I just don't know. I'm thinking you do like an expo, and you do all sorts of weird stuff to the photos. Like you have one lot, and it's a dartboard, so people got to throw darts at your photos.
Right.
Another one with people got to draw like moustaches and like devil's horns on the. Come and trash my art for art's sake.
Okay.
So I reckon it's got some legs.
Right.
I don't like my photos very much, but you can make them look better. But you could have one section where you tear them in the toilet. You maybe get print out on toilet paper. You can do that. So the toilets at the venue for the exhibition, you're wiping your bum on the art itself. You know, I'm just thinking aloud here. You know, you have a rubbish bin in the corner with all crumpled up your photos.
Right.
You know. You could have, what else could we do with them? If you're serving, like, food, like little cones with chips in them, well, the cones are wrapped up photos because it's only good for food serving. You could do, I reckon there's a whole thing you could do to come and trash my photos.
Right.
Yeah, there could be, you could have when we when there's like a whole bunch of stuff of the same photo stuck together as a big pile of them just tied together with a piece of string, and next to it was a cigarette lighter. You come, you rip one off, you set it on fire, drop into a metal bin. The next person gets to come along and do the same.
Right.
I'm thinking this has merit. I'm liking this. I hadn't thought about it until just then, but the more I'm thinking about it, this might be the first time I ever do an exhibition.
Right.
I love it. I think I might look for a sponsor, and we might do this next year.
Awesome.
So actually, this podcast has had some value for once. I'm writing this down. Trash. That's the name of the exhibition. Trash.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Nice.
Yeah. There we go. Love it. I met a gallery owner the other day. Actually, there we go.
It's
probably only good on opening night. Probably the rest of the nights. It's a bit weird. Some guy walks into a gallery by himself and starts ripping down stuff. No, that one finished last week. He just destroyed a real work of art. funny stuff. Anyway, the Banksy was funny. But then last week I mentioned that I thought that computational photography will be the next big thing in photography.
Yes.
You know? The more I've thought about it this week, the more convinced I've become that it's going to be as big a revolution as digital.
Wow.
The shift from film to digital, and then from digital to computational digital photography. And by funny coincidence, Google announced their Pixel 3 phone.
Yeah.
And they've substantially increased the computational photography that this thing can do.
Okay.
And some of the things it's doing is exactly what my thought process were for what the future of computational photography is going to do, how it's going to change photography.
Right.
So let me give you a note. So what last year's Pixel? I'm going to read what this article says. Last year, the Pixel 2 showed us what was possible with burst photography. HDR Plus was its secret sauce, its special feature, and it worked by constantly buffering 9 frames in memory. So whilst you're holding the phone at the scene, it's actually shooting all the time.
Right.
And keeping 9 frames. And then when you press the button, the camera essentially goes back to those last 9 frames, breaks each of them up into thousands of tiles, aligns them all over all 9 photos, and then averages them.
Wow.
Breaking each image into small tiles allows for the advanced alignment even when the photographer or subject introduces movement. Blurred elements in some shots can be discarded, or subjects that have moved from frame to frame can be realigned. Averaging simulates the effects of shooting with a larger sensor by evening out noise over 9 shots rather than over 1. And going back to in time to the last 9 frames captured right before you hit the shutter button means there's no shutter lag because the photo's already been taken.
Yeah.
So you don't miss the moment because the moment... So that was last year, okay? This year, Pixel 3 pushes it all further, okay? So it's gone from HDR Plus burst is now up to 15 images rather than 9. And then employs super resolution techniques to increase the resolution of the image beyond what the sensor and lens combination could traditionally achieve.
Right.
So subtle shifts from handheld shake and optical image stabilization allow the scene detail to be localized with sub-pixel precision, since shifts are unlikely to be exact multiples of a pixel. Okay, so it's getting to even into microscopic parts of pixels. So, in fact, this guy was told that the shifts are carefully controlled by the optical image stabilization system. And Google say, we can demonstrate the way the optical image stabilization moves very slightly, and precise sub-pixel shifts are not necessary at the sensor level. Instead, optical image stabilizer is used to uniformly distribute a bunch of scene samples across a pixel, and then the images are aligned into sub-pixel precision. In an instant, yeah.
Wow.
So the saying is, it just goes on and on. So we'll put the whole article in there. But what they're saying though is, if you have enough samples, you can expect any scene element to have fallen on a red, green, and blue pixel.
Yep.
After alignment, you then have an RGB information for any given scene element, which removes the need to demosaic.
Wow.
And that itself leads to an increased resolution, since you don't have to interpolate spatial data from neighboring pixels, and decreases in noise, since the math required for demosaicing is itself a source of noise.
Wow.
The benefits are essentially similar to what you get when shooting with pixel shift modes on dedicated cameras. Okay.
Jeez.
Then they've got raw capability now. It says, but it's not raw like we know raw.
Oh, okay.
You know raw, I know raw. This ain't that raw. This is the next gen raw.
Oh.
Okay. So one key difference relative to the rest of the industry, their DNG is the result of aligning and merging up to 15 frames.
Right.
So their raw is actually a combination of 15 frames, not just one frame.
Wow.
There you go. Which makes it look more like the result of a DSLR. There's no exaggeration here. We know very well that the image quality tends to scale with sensor size, thanks to the greater amount of total light collected per exposure, which reduces the impact of the most dominant source of noise in images, photon shot or statistical noise, whatever that is. But the pixel cameras can effectively make up for their small sensor sizes by capturing more total light through multiple exposures.
Right.
It's had 15 exposures of light rather than a single exposure of light. And while aligning moving objects from frame to frame so they can still be averaged out to decrease noise, it means better low light performance and higher dynamic range than you'd expect with such a small sensor. And so they're saying shooting raw allows you to take advantage of the extra range, and basically he's saying that the photos are equivalent in looking to APS-C size sensors and DSLRs.
Wow.
Taken with the phone.
Wow.
So where I say the change is going to come, imagine incorporating this technology in large sensor cameras.
Yeah.
You know?
That would be phenomenal.
If it's that amazing with a phone, how good could it be when that technology shifts through the world of photography?
Yeah.
It's quite stunning.
Like, based on what you've said, like, as you were reading through that and you were skimming through that, and for everyone else, I will put the full text that Glyn has sent me into the show notes. But while you were skimming through that, I was thinking, this more than anything will kill the DSLR market. Do you think there will still be a DSLR market, even with this technology?
Well, first, as there always will be, because a phone can't reproduce the lens range.
Right.
Okay, so you can't have the angles of view.
Sure.
But if you're worried, if I'm Mr. Nikon, whatever they call themselves, I would say, well, why would I let this little pincy technology, these small sensors beat me? Why not just use that same technology on my large camera and blow them completely out of the water by how good it's going to look with this stuff?
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah, it just makes sense to me that, yeah. And you're starting to see some of this technology coming into, yeah, SLRs. We're talking about pixel shift technology and like Pentax cameras and the stuff that Sony's and Fuji's are doing with their mirrorless. So you can see there's an ability in a mirrorless camera, which is effectively the same as shooting with a phone, to incorporate the same technology.
Yeah.
Wow. Yes, watch this space, because and the rest of that article goes on to a whole bunch of other stuff. They're saying five ways this phone pushes the boundaries of computational photography.
There's
just so many amazing ways, and just the way it's simulating it, what's called its depth mapping is becoming so incredibly accurate because of the amount of data it's getting over these 15 frames.
Yeah.
That's a whole new world. It's going to be... I always said, we're living in the most amazing time of the history of photography, with the possible exception of those early years of the invention of photography.
Yeah.
But we've never had so much and so much incredible stuff going on. So, yeah, it's what I said last week. Absolutely.
Great time to be alive.
It is.
Anyway. Steve Peters posted a photograph to the Shutters Inc. podcast wall on Facebook, which I'll have to download a copy of that so that I can put in the show notes for the benefit of the listeners who aren't on Facebook. But it's an interesting sign that's been put up in Queensland. He didn't actually say where.
Oh, yes, I saw this, yeah.
And it says, "Taking a selfie, get likes, not fines."
It does actually say, the sign actually says where it is.
Oh, does it?
Yeah, if you read it.
Oh, yes, so it does, down towards the bottom. Okay, no worries.
I know, it's in English. It could be confusing for you.
I hadn't read all of the fine print down the bottom of the sign. I read the first couple of lines and got the gist of it, and then I'd stopped there.
Yeah.
Yeah, okay, so it's at Purlingbrook Falls on the Gold Coast. But, yes, I will put that in the show notes anyway. So love that one, Steve. Thank you very much. Adam sent us a couple of stories. One was the 48-hour project to merge a Hasselblad and a Fujifilm Instax 9 camera into one Franken camera, as the guy describes it. And basically, the two guys who worked on this limited themselves strictly to a 48-hour time frame, so that they were forced to keep the design simple and on target, and to not wander off into other potential, design ideas. So they just wanted to get it done. And this blog post on DIY Photography Net just goes through the whole process of them, pulling apart the digital camera to see how the various parts of it worked, and pulling apart part of the Hasselblad to see how the inside of that worked, and then merging it all together and coming up with this, crazy medium format Hasselblad with a digital back made out of
it. I love one of the reasons why, because they wanted to take the sharpness of the Hasselblad, but the image quality out of those prints is so poor that you're not going to see any sharpness anyway. You might as well be shooting with my shaker.
They did say that they were impressed with the sharpness in there somewhere.
Yeah. Well, they have to say that because, they just spent all this time and effort, didn't they?
I suppose so. Anyway,
those prints aren't renowned for their detail, but still.
It's cool, though.
It's a bit of fun, isn't it?
Yeah. Exactly. And the other one that Adam sent us was the story of a Canadian photographer who really, I would go so far as to say, pioneered this technique of how to photograph individual snowflakes. And it's an interesting story. He, got right into the whole macro thing, and I don't know what inspired him to want to shoot snowflakes, but he realized very early on that in order to light them properly, because he says, you know, traditionally they were photographed on, you know, sheets of glass with and being lit from below. He wanted to light them from the top, but because of their tiny size, it would mean firing light pretty much in line with the lens. And so he went to incredible lengths to create this system whereby he could photograph individual snowflakes and get these amazing images. And he's now been recognized by the government and had his a couple of his snowflake images embedded on national coins issued by the Canadian Mint, which is pretty cool.
Yeah.
So it's a very interesting story. And some of his images, like, you look at them and go, that's not a photo, that's just CGI. Like they just look that amazing. It looks like it's been generated in Illustrator, but they're actually photographs of individual snowflakes. So, yeah, definitely worth checking out. And I grabbed a couple of things this evening just before we started to record. The first one I thought was very interesting. This is on DIYphotography.net as well. This is what happens when a drone hits an aeroplane. And essentially, these guys felt like it's only a matter of time before this happens.
Yeah.
Every man and his dog's got a UAV, and there's too many cowboys out there who don't follow the rules, and that it's only a matter of time before someone actually lets their drone run into an aeroplane. And this research lab decided that they should do some tests to see just what kind of an impact that might have. And I think they're testing. I didn't watch the whole, well, it's about a 4-minute video.
Well, that's a lot of commitment. Yeah,
it's a huge commitment, yeah. I think what they were testing for was slow-moving aircraft, like, you know, propeller-driven aeroplanes.
Yeah.
I did see one part of the video where he said, you know, if this had been a faster-moving plane, like a business jet, then the damage done would have been much more severe and could, you know, potentially bring the plane down. Essentially, the takeaway was that with a slow-moving aeroplane, the damage would be pretty nasty to the wing, but not enough to bring the plane down. But it's still an interesting, horrible potential future thing that we're going to have to deal with at some point.
Yeah.
So anyway, definitely worth a look. For those
But the thing is, though, realistically, if you're like in a jumbo jet coming down to land and you hit one of these suckers...
Yep.
Maybe you're 500, let's say 500 metres up in the air, which is far higher than the drone's allowed to be, and you hit one of these suckers, well, it's not very far to go to get to the ground.
No, that's
so
true.
If your wing comes off,
yeah,
you can fall for, say, 490 metres, then jump the rest.
Yeah, yeah. Of course you can.
And, you know, I've always wondered, if you're in a plane that's just falling straight down, if you could time it just right,
and jump
if
up
you jumped up in the air just as it hit the ground...
Yeah.
I've also, if you're in an elevator that falls, if you could, you know, figure it out, you know, if I jump up just to hit the ground, you're going to be okay.
Yeah, of course you will. It'll just be the fireball exploding below you that will be the problem. Well,
there's those. There's always somebody to put you down, isn't there? There's always someone out there who wants to take a genius's ideas and just slap them down with reality.
Yeah, exactly. The next one I came across was on digitalphotographyschool.com, and it was titled A Love Letter to the Humble Softbox by John McIntyre. And I just thought I'd throw this in there for anyone who, you know, is looking at experimenting with shooting with softboxes. It just covers the basics and the sorts of looks you can get from using different angles with your softbox relative to your subject matter. And all the different types of looks you can create.
So, is that, sorry, your subject matter has to be relatives.
Yeah, so, that's right, Glenn. That's it.
Sorry,
Glad to see you paying attention.
Sorry, I was playing baseball on my...
Of course you were. The next one I got, and I got this one specifically for you, Mr. Lavender.
Oh, sorry, did you?
Yes.
What's that?
Film 35 is yet another solution that converts your old film camera into digital.
There's another one, is that? Is this one actually going to come to fruition?
And what these guys promise is that it can work with any camera. So basically, they've created this sensor and, you know, capture mechanism to be shaped like a 35mm film canister with, you know, film extending over the film plane, so that it can drop into the film bay on a on a film camera. And so basically they're saying this should work with pretty much any 35mm SLR camera. You know, analog SLR camera. So, yeah, so I just thought, oh, that's interesting because, you know, I knew you'd got your Yashica this week and we're all excited about it. And I just thought, oh, well, this is...
I was just having a quick look at the comments because that's usually the most fun place to go look at.
And what do the comments say?
No one's really going yet. I think most of them are all saying, it wouldn't work because of this, this and this. But who knows? But I love the fact that, yeah, the first ever sample taken with this thing is a photo of someone taking a photo with their phone.
Right.
Yeah, it's like I would have trouble imagining they can make the sensor thin enough,
right,
to fit. Yeah, because remember, a piece of film is fairly thin.
Very thin. Yep.
Yeah, yep. And I just that would be my interest to see how they But hey, who knows? It's cool. Nice find.
Yeah, absolutely. The next one is probably old news now, but I thought I'd put it in the list anyway. For those of you who are running Windows 10, be wary of the automatic update to version 1809 of Windows 10. I think I read somewhere yesterday that Microsoft has actually stopped the rollout of this version, but people who were affected by it found that after running the update, files were deleted from their My Documents and My Photos and My Videos folders on their C drive. So I would like to think that people would be smart enough these days not to keep their data in the C drive, but I know that there are people that still do that.
Yeah.
But, just be wary of that if you... hopefully you weren't bitten. But, anyway. And the last one?
My Microsoft Surface Windows 10 updated and then would no longer turn on anymore.
Seriously?
Yeah, so it's at the shop having to have her whole new reinstall of Windows being put into it.
Wow. That's crap.
Just what I need just before going away.
Yeah, of course. And the last one that I've got was, again, from digitalphotographyschool.com, and it's how to sync your develop presets to Lightroom Mobile. As those people who use Lightroom would be aware, over the last 12 months, Adobe's really made a big push on their mobile version of Lightroom, and it now, in its current iteration, will use all of the develop presets that you have for your desktop version, whether they're, you know, presets that you've saved yourselves or they're presets that you've bought and downloaded. And so this article will go through how you can take those presets and get them onto whatever mobile device you happen to be running Lightroom Mobile on. So for those that are still in that camp, check it out. And that's me.
Absolutely. Done. Hey, sheesh. Well, this is it for a couple of weeks.
Right.
I'm leaving next Thursday morning. Right. So.
And you're gone for how long?
2 weeks.
Beautiful.
So have to chat to yourself.
Yeah.
Or get a volunteer.
I might reach out to Joe and see if Joe wants to come back on.
Joe who?
Edelman.
I'm catching up with him.
Are you?
Yeah.
Awesome.
He at the show, so... impossible. It'd be kind of cool to do one with both of me and him over there and you here, but that's just not going to work schedule-wise. It's just a nightmare.
Right.
But I'm too busy. Yeah. Too busy already to add anything else to my plate. I'm already stressed. I'm catching up with him. So, yeah, see if he can get on and before he meets me and see what he says about me, and then he can maybe do him again after he's met me. And
the before and after podcast.
Pretty much. Yeah, but see if he wants to co-host with you. Give it an idea.
Yeah.
Why not?
All right, mate. Well, you have a safe trip and an enjoyable trip.
I'll try.
Take some good photos.
Unlikely.
Have fun in New York.
Yeah. Take a break. I found myself with a bonus day in New York, so I've got an extra day off after the show. Yeah, I shouldn't be flying home, and I thought the trade show finished on the Sunday night, and it finishes on the Saturday night, which is very unusual.
Yeah, that is unusual.
So most of the ones would actually go the whole weekend, but So instead of flying home like I should have been doing and getting home before my wife goes away, I'm now flying home a day later, getting home while she's already gone, and poor Nana has to look after everybody.
So you're going to organise a photo shoot for your own enjoyment?
I hadn't thought about it. Maybe I should. Maybe I should do a model shoot in New York City or something. I don't know.
Totally.
I am. I've actually got a couple of days off after my workshops and before the show starts. I've got a couple of days off in country Pennsylvania.
Nice.
I'm going to go for a bit of a drive, maybe hop down to Amish country, just take some photos for me.
It's going to be their fall, isn't it?
Yeah. It's probably just past fall. The colours are probably just gone, I would imagine.
Right.
Because it's getting towards the end of October, which is a bit late. But it's Halloween.
There might be some little pockets that have not yet...
There might be snow.
Yeah, could be that too.
So last time I was there in October, it was a lot of snow on the ground. So we'll just have to see what happens. But so I've got a couple of days off to go and do a bit of drive in the country and see if there's something I can take some photos of.
Oh, sensational.
Yeah.
That sounds like fun.
Well, we'll soon find out.
Excellent. All right, mate. Well, we'll talk with you when you get back.
No worries. Take care, everybody.
Bye.
Bye.
ShutterZinkPodcast.com.
AnotherAudioTier.com quality podcast.
For questions, comments, and feedback, email theboys@ShutterZinkPodcast.com.